Good morning. Thank you, men, for leading the service up to this point and continuing on after I'm done here. You guys have been doing an excellent job. Adam, wherever you went, good job facilitating our songs. Excellent job. I couldn't help but smile a little bit as I was reflecting over this week, and as we're singing, "There's a stirring deep within me, could it be my time has come?" Yeah, that sounds about right. Wow. In November, when the earthquake happened, I taught about earthquakes in Scripture, and so I thought about perhaps this week talking about sickness and ailment, and personally speaking, it's a little too close to home still. If we start talking about as a dog returns to its vomit, that's probably a passage we should avoid, just because I don't want to reflect any more on that than I need to. But there are a lot of people here that are still sick, not here now, hopefully, but at home. And so they're streaming in right now, as well as other people around the state and even the world. And there's a lot of people that stream into our services online each Sunday. And so we don't get to have the great interaction like we do in potluck and classes and afterwards. And so they miss out on that, even though they're here digitally. And so if you would, they're all watching right now. So if everyone can look at this camera here, and if everybody can just wave at them, there are people, and everybody say, "We love you. We love you." So thanks for doing that. That, I know, will make them feel loved. They're here with us in spirit, and they're watching this right now, and they're a part of this, and wanted to make sure that they know that they are loved, even though, and it's difficult not being here physically. Okay, this morning's lesson, I want to start out by talking about that children are a blessing. There's so many good things that come from having children. They really challenge you. They cause you to look at, what are you going to influence them with? What good or bad are you going to be imprinting on them? And they make you reflect and look at your own self. And what are you providing? What can you provide? Do you need to be providing more? And there's a lot of great challenges that come from it, but blessings as well. They cause you to want to be more responsible in lots of different areas. They also cause you to love. You learn that someone is dependent on you. And there's so many great blessings. The list is very long that children provide. But children can also become an idol. When something takes the place of God in your life, where you go to them, where your identity becomes something other than a child of God, a servant of God, it can become an idol, where your entire life revolves around this one thing. And parenthood, it can become an idol. And so I wanted to begin starting to think, well, where's the line? Where? Because we're supposed to love our children. We're supposed to provide for children. God designed child rearing of children. He designed marriage. When does family become out of place, and it loses its place in the totem pole where it's supposed to be? Where does that happen? We live in a society where the family, we live in a culture where the family is very much attacked. It's very pushed aside. It's wanting to be disassembled and scoffed at. And we can overreact to that and say, no, we have to have healthy families, we need to have healthy families, but we can focus so much on wanting to have healthy families, we can neglect being healthy with God. And we can make our identity be, oh, we're exclusively about healthy families. And that is a dangerous path to take. So making this lesson is to take a step back and to have wisdom and sobriety of, okay, what does God want us to be? What does He desire for us? Where do families and children fit into our walk with God. So our passage this morning is Isaiah 56, and this is going to be our main passage. So turn your Bibles over here. We're going to be looking at two verses in chapter 56, verses 4 and verses 5. A very, very powerful passage. For thus says the Lord, so this is God talking, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbath, who choose the things that please me and hold fast my covenant, I will give in my house and within my walls a monument and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. I want us to chew on several parts of this passage this morning. There's something better than sons and daughters. Having unity has been a tremendous blessing, but God has given something even better. Having your children, I'm sure you would say, you'd like to say that they've been a blessing. God has given something better. For those of you desiring to have children and haven't been able to, or haven't been married, are not married yet, but you desire to have kids, it's a noble desire, but God has promised something even better. There's something better than sons and daughters, and it is to be within the house of God and to have a name given from him to you that's an everlasting name. So we're going to be looking at this. What does these things mean? How can we apply them to our lives? Who made marriage and childbearing? God did. God knows what he's doing. He made something very good. He made these things in the garden, marriage and having children. God is a creator, and he made something amazing in this marriage and in this having children. Is that the best he could do? Did he max out his creative powers in making marriage and making having children? We're going to go be with the one who made these things. If you can appreciate the beauty of a painting like Mona Lisa, it's this great masterpiece. There's nothing really else like it. It's really quite beautiful. But if you got to be with Da Vinci forever, he would probably continue to paint and do things and create things and make things even better than Mona Lisa as time went on. We're going to go be with the one who made this beautiful thing of having children. We're going to be with God forever, and we can't quite comprehend what that's going to be like, but we know it's going to be better. This week, when I had this norovirus, I had to look that up. I've never even heard of it until this week. And I guess it was some strain in Europe in the 60s, and it's interesting to research it. But this week, I got to have the firsthand experience of it, and it was awful. And for Monday and Tuesday and most of Wednesday, I was just curled up, not able to function very well at all. I didn't leave the house until Thursday. I was finally able to get out and walk around a little bit. And I was walking out, and it was so nice. It was so sunny. And the contrast of Thursday and Monday was so intense, from not being able to even think straight or eat anything, keep anything down, to Thursday being able to be at peace and walk and be able to be in control of my body and be able to enjoy the sun and to just be able to explore a little bit instead of being stuck somewhere. I was thinking the difference between Mike Thursday and Mike Monday, if you could put them next to each other, I could look at myself and the other person just curled up and just in pain. The difference between Mike healthy and Mike sick is is going to be similar to Mike when Jesus returns and I receive a new body. We're going to be changed. We're going to be in a better situation with God, and there's going to be a change that takes place, and it's going to be better. And so having children, having marriage in this life is a good thing. But then when we get to be with God, there's going to be something even better. And the contrast is not going to be like a slightly better. It's not going to be an improvement, but it's something truly infinitely, infinitely better. I don't want to paint a picture that having children or marriage is bad or worldly, but I just want to hammer home as hard as I can that there is something better than having children and being married. Let me give an illustration which will hopefully continue to make this point. It doesn't do it quite justice, but I think it does at least a little bit. So let's think about cash. You can do good with cash. You could take somebody out to eat. You could buy somebody a gift. You could do something with it. It could be called, you could do good things with this. And you can focus on this. I really want to get more cash. I want more of this so I want to do good things. So you can focus on this. Well, what behind this, there might be something much more, and that's something of, say, a credit card of unlimited money. That's not what this is, but imagine, use our imaginations here. So what can happen is we can get so focused on a good thing, we miss out on the best thing. God has given us a blessing, for those of us who have received it, of marriage and children, and we can get so focused on that, where we're focusing on this, but then we're forgetting that there's something of infinite blessing, something better that God has given us, and that's a place with Him forever. And so when they're lined up, that's okay, but when we get so focused on this cash, we get so focused on this marriage and family, and it starts to drift, we start going after it, and we're now getting separated from this place with God forever. And so my warning, my caution is that we don't let a good thing get in the way of the best thing. We don't let our marriage and our families become a higher priority than our connection and place with God. Marriage and family are so important. It is so noble to pursue having a healthy relationship. It's even godly to pursue having a healthy relationship with your spouse and children. But they do not supersede having a healthy relationship with God. I heard some advice years ago that really stuck with me, and I really want to start implementing it in my life. And that is, I heard of the situation where a man comes home from work, and what he would do is his children would run to come greet him. They were so excited that dad was home, and he would just walk past his children, kind of cold shoulder-esque, walk right past him. I don't think he even make eye contact with him, walk right past him and find his wife, kiss his wife, talk to her, make sure she's good, hear how her day has been. And then once that took place, he would then turn to his children and love on his children and roll around on the floor with them. And this man's intentions with this is that the children needed to see that he loved his spouse, their mother, more than he loved them, that she had a priority over them. And I thought that there was some great wisdom to that. Now, we should do the same thing, but for God, where we should love our families immensely, but we should be walking to God first. He should be our number one priority, and our families should know that. Our families should feel that you have a number one priority for God, which then flows into all the rest of your family. So again, don't let a good thing get in the way of the best thing. So back to Isaiah, we see here that to those who choose the things that please me and hold fast my covenant. I would love to talk about the eunuchs here and talking about the Israelites that were taken into captivity and made eunuchs by their captors and put into slavery, and they had the chance of having children removed from them, and just the pain of having to go through that emotionally and physically, and then the hope God tells them. I wish I could talk more about that. But right now, I want to talk about the principle of walking faithfully with God. God promises something better than even sons and daughters. And that promise is now in verse 5, I will give in my house, within my walls, a monument and a name. Let's talk about that for a while. This is something God is giving. This is a gift. It comes from him. And though he's given it to those who are obedient, it's not something that is achieved. It's not something that's earned. Jesus is able to give us this monument and a name. He's able to give us this abundant life because of what he did on the cross. And like Lauren was mentioning earlier, there's so much that happened on the cross where Jesus took on the sins of the whole world, past, present, and future. And to be honest, we will never really understand all that took place on the cross. It's God's work. It's God's business of him taking the sins of all mankind and paying the price for them. We can't totally comprehend the mechanics and the significance of what took place there. And Jesus sacrificed more than just his body in that moment. He sacrificed his life. He sacrificed the potential life. He sacrificed having a family. He sacrificed having children and a spouse and going to the cross and living this life the way that he did for our benefit. He gave up this thing that we, many of us, have received. He gave that up for our benefit. I think there is some wisdom in recognizing that in his service, in his walk and sacrifice, and we're disciples of him, we realize Jesus is all the world to me, as we sang moments ago. And that's, our families need to hear that, that Jesus is all the world to me, even more so than my family. There's a similar passage to Isaiah in Revelation. I want us to look at it. It's going to, I think, mirror many of these truths. Revelation chapter 2, we want to turn over here to verse 17. Jesus is resurrected, and he's in heaven, and he's then sending a message to the churches in the first century, specifically to seven of them. He's sending a message to them, but it's an open message, and the message pertains to everyone, even though it's to specific recipients. So, chapter 17, Jesus is teaching. He says, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone with a new name written on that stone that no one knows except for the one who receives it. So the parallels here is we have Jesus giving to those who conquer, which is in Revelation meaning those who are faithful unto death. So similar to Isaiah, to those who keep the Sabbath, to do what pleases me, Jesus is going to give a monument and a name. Here he says, I'm going to give them hidden manna. He's going to provide for them from God. And he's also going to give them a white stone. And I want to talk about this stone. This is the monument, per se, in Isaiah. And the significance of this stone. So this is talking to the church in Pergamum. And they had a quarry in Pergamum that they would mine these specific white stones. The church here and the people at this time knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. This white stone had specific meaning and a specific purpose in their culture. It was used for four different things, this white stone. It was used to give to a man who had been acquitted, who was put to trial and then acquitted. It was given to someone who was freed of slavery and then given citizenship. They would then be given a stone with their new name on it. They were given to those who were winners of a contest in which they had to overcome opposition. And then these stones were also given to warriors who had returned back victoriously. They would receive this stone. And then we're told that this stone also has a name on it, which no one knows except for the one who receives it. And this is this beautiful imagery of Jesus giving his people, those who are faithful, this stone and saying, you are no longer guilty. You are victorious. You are mine. And the amount of acceptance and freedom and victory instilled here is really quite, really quite amazing. And especially the intimacy of nobody knows it. Nobody knows it except for the one who receives it. And I want to make a point here in saying that you don't know who you are until you get to know God. I want you to think that through. You don't know who you are until you get to know who Jesus is. He's the one who made you. You were fearfully and wonderfully made. He knit you together in your mother's womb. Your soul was created by him. And so I think he has a better idea than you do, or I do, or the world does, or our friends do, or each other do, or society, for who we are and what we think and what's going on and what we're to be. Jesus knows these things. I think Ravi Zachariah has said it, I think, quite well, in saying that God's like the sun. You can't look directly at him, but without him you can't see anything at all. In that Jesus reveals to us who we are and what we were made for. We're made for more than just living the American dream. We're made for more than having a family and children. We're made for more than comfort and living. We're made for more than assembling here this morning. We're made to be with God forever. And that it's something better than anything this world has to offer. So let's go back to Isaiah. Let's finish up with our last point and continuing with this concept of an everlasting name, this name that's on the stone and in Revelation, this name that's here with this monument that's given to those who are faithful, an everlasting name. Family is amazing. Family is important. Do you know your great-grandfather's name? Or great-grandmother's name? I don't know mine. I know that they were in Europe and Lithuania, but I don't know their name. Family is amazing. And the names that we bestow on our children and learn, you know, our spouse's name, and we get to, you learn the name before they become your spouse, but in case you're wondering. But our names are not everlasting. It only takes a few generations, and they're like, who's our great-grandparents? That name doesn't live on forever. But the name Jesus gives you, your identity as his children, that goes on forever. And that is a beautiful thing. There's nothing else like it. The verse that Daniel read for us earlier in Matthew 16:26, Jesus says, how does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but forfeits his soul? We often narrow that down to material things. If you work too many hours and you just become like a workaholic and you're just so materialistic, you invest your life in just accumulating a huge pile of money. And that, for many years, that's kind of how I just interpreted and perceived that passage. Marriage is not going to be in heaven. Anyone else is part of that, this world? In some levels, it's having children. The thought of having children and marriage is part of this world. And I'm not saying it's worldly, but if you focus so much on having a family and children, that doesn't save you. That doesn't make you right with God, just having a family and having children. There is a false teaching that I have interacted with multiple times with people in our society that is, you need to be married and have children to be right with God. Now, if you are married already and you are mistreating your spouse, then that does interfere with your connection to God. If you don't live with your wife in an understanding way, your prayers will be hindered. That is a true teaching. But there is a false teaching that you can't be right with God unless you have children, is a false teaching I've had to interact with and challenge, that you need to be married to go to heaven is even what some groups have taught. And it is a false teaching. It is a false teaching. God has given us something through Jesus far better than sons and daughters, that the only way to God the Father is through Jesus. He is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but through him, not through marriage, not through children, but through Jesus, and it is far, far better. We want to sacrifice for our children, and we should want to sacrifice for our children. To sacrifice our very lives is a noble and a good thing, to give up our time, resources, emotions, and pour them into our kids to provide them the highest quality life that they can have. That is a great, noble, and right thing to do. It's right for us to give up our lives for our kids, but it's not right to give up his abundant life for our kids. Okay, I'll say that again. It's the right thing to give up our lives for our children. It's wrong to give up God's life, Christ's life, for our children. We shouldn't let the urgent get in the way of the essential. We should not let the urgent get in the way of the essential. God made you for more than reproducing. He made you more than being in a marriage. He made you to be with him forever, to be right with him, to live with him for everlasting. And I want us to make sure we have sobriety and wisdom in recognizing that having children, as beautiful as a joy they are, our hope and our rightness with God comes from Jesus. And that is a better thing. We're not broken people if you don't have children. To our single people, those who struggle to have children, there's a terrible pain and weight that they feel and sometimes are passively spoken to them. Like if you're single, it's like, hey, you seen anybody? Like anybody on your radar? We ask those types of questions. And if you're dating, you're like, hey, when are you gonna get? Are you going to get married? And if you're married, it's like, when are you going to have kids? And when are you going to have your next? Like, we ask these questions, and there's an unspoken, like, something's wrong with you if you're not making progress in those things. Like, that's the only track to healthy, right living. And we need to be really careful, really careful. There's a slippery slope when we equate family life with godly life. We are told to be right with God. We are to, like here in Isaiah, to choose the things that please me, to hold fast my covenant. Those are the things we are to be lifting up. And those are the things we are to be prioritizing. So again, God made you for more than family and marriage and children. He made a way through Christ for you to be with him forever. And I want us to make sure that we have that prioritization, that we see the goodness that family is, but we see the infinite love of Jesus very clearly, and that is what we are pursuing, and that's what we bring into our families, and that's what our families see, that God has made something better than even something as good as family, and it is being right with him. So with that in mind, if there's any needs here this morning that we can assist with, or anyone who needs to be baptized into Christ, please come forward while we stand and sing.